Welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from east of the Appalachians in North Carolina. AccuWindow forecast, about 51 degrees outside. My guest tonight is Kevin David. We're discussing ancient languages, their origins, and how they tie into the current human race. Also want to let you know, Remembering the Future is coming out as an ebook a week from today, so stay tuned. Make sure to get your copy as soon as possible. They'll be coming out at a price, an introductory price of $7.95. So that'll give you a chance to get it in your hands, follow up on the Ark of Millions of Years series. There was a preview of this book, 55 pages long, in Volume 3. And now we're up to 220 pages in this book. And believe me, all of the tools are there to master the law of attraction. We're going to open the phone lines this hour to 415-762-1161. Anywhere on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us, 415-762-1161. We used to have toll-free numbers. Nobody made any use of it because everybody has free nights and weekends anyway, and cell phones with unlimited long distance, and we were kind of precluding those people in Europe because they don't have 800 service over there. So 415-762-1161. You can call in and ask any question you like. Welcome back to the program, Kevin.
Well, thank you. I've been chatting with my Chinese students, and they're trying to access the radio program in China on the computer. They're trying to get around the Great Firewall, as they say.
Ah, the Great Firewall.
The program. So I have some students that, are you on the radio? What are you talking about? I was talking about when I was teaching you. hopefully you'll get some friends over there.
Good. Hey, where are your students at in China over there?
They're all over the place. I got them in Beijing and all over. I've been teaching there for almost 4 years, so on a university level. And a number of my students are in the working world now, and they're all over China. And I still, they come in contact with me, and they want to ask questions about their careers and things like that. And so imagine, like your IM, instant messaging, your MSN or your Yahoo, having about 500 friends. I have, the equivalent of that on QQ, their instant messaging. So I have about 500 friends, which are mostly students. and they're from all over China, mostly the Shandong province area. Some are from, a lot of them are from the Beijing area. They're from all over. It depends, you know, some as far as Sichuan, where the earthquake was. They, you know, have some students there and contribute a lot to the families there. And some of my students are teaching there now. I also have a class where I actually teach how to be a teacher and educate my students who want to be educators. And some of them are in Sichuan province right now. They're helping out and rebuilding that that society there.
Wow. Yeah, I visited six cities when I was in China last May.
Oh, wow, okay.
But I was only there, you know, for 2 weeks, and you really can't see that much. And besides, I was there on business, so I didn't get to see the things I wanted to see. I want to talk a little bit about China here in a little bit. But one of the things that I noticed is that there are similarities between the Chinese and American indigenous peoples. In my travels to China, you know, I found many different looking people, but the only common feature they had was the black hair. Some had round eyes, some had different chins, different teeth, and they come in a variety of heights. I mean, I couldn't believe how many men and women there were around 6 feet tall. You know, it's crazy. I've often said that something's wrong with the world when the tallest man in basketball is Chinese and the world's best golfer is only 10 years old.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'd be teaching students that are tall. I'm 6 feet, and I'm teaching. I'm looking up to some of these kids, you know, and they just love basketball. And I did teach that. One of my classes I do teach is the relationship between the Native Americans and the Chinese people, you know, or actually the Asians that, you know, the ancient culture that came over from, you know, through the Bering Straits and into the Southwest, you know, forming the Native American cultures, and it's their relatives, it's their ancestors. And it's also kind of interesting that, you know, some of them are aware of that and some of them aren't. They want to know about the Native Americans. They want to know about who these people were. So I would show them, you know, well, I'll show them movies about Native Americans and, you know, the history of that, you know, the true history of America. And they want to know. They have this consciousness inside. They have this yin consciousness, like the, you know, they're very soft. They're very soft people because of their yin. We're yang. We're the yang type style. We're the more aggressive, the more bold. And so they're more yin with that. They want to know about their origins and where they came from as far as the culture, because many do believe, because it's a society where a lot of their history is censored. You can't access it. I can't just, you know, talk about certain things. There are certain things that I can't talk about out there. I can't, you know, discuss things involving the two T's, actually the three T's. But a lot of it, what they're learning is censored. They just don't know, but they know that they have a relationship with the Native American community. They know that, but they just don't know.
Well, I'm curious which one came first, the Native Americans in the Americas or the Chinese people?
As far as what was that?
Which race came first? Was it the Native Americans or was it the Chinese?
Well, they're, you know, from history, it indicates that it came from Asia. Some extent, but that's what they're thinking. I'm of a different line of thought, which that because the way the culture spread out in the history of South America and North America, and what we found are, you know, I call myself an archaeo explorer, is quite different. There is a relationship when these cultures sank beneath the waves, they spread out. The cultures went all over. Okay, and they're part of that, but they have a relationship with the Native Americans. They sense that. But they don't know exactly the origin of that either. It's, you know, some of the things that they're taught indicates that there's more to it. But a lot of it's censored. And there's a lot of works in Chinese that need to be translated into English, there's a tremendous amount of things. There's a history that would be unbelievable once a lot of this is deciphered and translated into, English, for example.
Well, the strange thing is that you got the Native Americans, you got the Asians, you got South Americans. But the big difference is, if all this came from Asia, you would think that some of the cultures, some of the habits, some of the methods, some similarities in language would come forward. The Asians were and have always been incredible record keepers. They keep their genealogy going back generation after generation. Their language, their kanji writing is proliferated all over half the world. But when you get to Native Americans, there's no written language, no records whatsoever. They don't keep track of any genealogy. It's like these people were dropped out of space onto Earth. They just appeared.
The Earth, actually. A lot of them, they feel like they came up from the Earth. You're right, it's because their tradition is handed down literally through the spoken word. It's oral. It's oral traditions. The Chinese, for that, they're record keepers, they're discoverers, but there's a lot more to that culture that they're not telling their people. There's a lot more to it, because the history of them is when they put up that Great Wall and the emperor goes, okay, we're not going to contact anybody anymore. So much for the great, the explorers that went around, Admiral Hook. Who, discovered, or not so much discovered, but sailed to South America on his treasure ships. All of this. They're keeping a lot of this, a lot of the records from the people. They don't want them to know the real truth. So they're just giving them, okay, this is what's going on.
Alex writes me Alex asks me, what can't he talk about? What 3T?
I forgot I'm in America. I can say it. I'm sorry. Tibet, Taiwan, and Tiananmen Square.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've been to Tibet. That's a tragedy. What's going on there? My goodness.
Yeah, I can't. I can basically, if I discuss that or get involved in that, I can lose my job.
Well, yeah. I can't.
Because it's controversial, and I the students will ask me about that. If a student approaches me. Not in the classroom, but, I will express what the Western viewpoint would be in relation to this the best I can.
Well, I went to Tibet, and I can't lose my job. I fired myself 3 times last week, and I had to hire myself back again. Tibet is the most unbelievable project since 1959.
Oh, absolutely.
Chinese would... They've been building roads all over that country using Tibetan labor with a combination of sledgehammers, loafers, slacks, and Chinese heavy equipment. And those roads are built into the mountains of minerals which they are stripping out of that country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really something. When I arrived back in the States...
You got Tibet, you got Mongolia, you got Inner Mongolia, you have all this other area that's virtually unexplored to some extent too. We don't know exactly what's there. But that's where you talk to the locals from. And with the connections that I have while traveling through China and my students, and I can make the local connections and get what the real legends are and follow up, on that. Things about Genghis Khan, for example. All of this. And they have their legend stories. They have their Shangri-La. They have their Lost Horizon. They have that. It's a matter of getting a local to point you in the direction of it's over there type thing. But it's really interesting. It's just an amazing culture.
Well, it really is. When Marco Polo said when he returned from exploring China, as he sailed up the great rivers, he said, thank God the Chinese people are not warlike. We have the Chinese people, they were so scientifically advanced. Their architecture was amazing. The scope and the care that they took when they built their cities, their bridges, their giant squares and unbelievable bridges and aqueducts and everything. Europe had nothing like this. When Marco Polo arrived, he basically said, you know, these people are so advanced and yet so peaceful. If they were to venture out, they would just take over the whole world.
Oh, yeah. So many things were discovered, or, you know, not so much invented, but discovered, whether it be astronomy, the compass, mathematics, all of this. That's the dumbfounding thing in trying to educate and help my students learn, is they can't see the forest through the trees. They go, you guys, you used to be an expressive culture. I mean, we learned from you. I mean, thank you. Ha, ha, ha. You know, very good. So I thank them. I mean, I'm a student of them. And they have to discover themselves now. That's what's happening in the educational system. There is such a train wreck. They need to discover their past and bring it alive and to become the explorers they were. And they learned very quickly. Believe me, these kids learned very quickly. Very humble, very nice kids.
Huh. Well, there are ancient secrets in China, though, and these are things that we in the West are just now, just because of the internet and people are snapping pictures of it and sending out and saying, hey, look what I found. Is there a pyramid in China?
Oh, yeah, it's in Xi'an. I got students there. They're always inviting me to go down there and see the what they call the white pyramids. They're not white, but they're covered by, you know, grass. I mean, they're huge. And I have a number of students from Xi'an, and they always invite me to come down. Hey, Kevin, come on down. We want, you know, welcome to my my hometown up there. So I never had the opportunity. I've been so busy. I only have so much time off during the year. And when you have 500 students per semester, and they all want you to come to their hometown, you know.
I was in Chengdu, which is in Sichuan.
Okay, sure, I've been there. Sure.
And, I mean, it's kind of out of the way. It's in the middle of a lot of people, but it's way down in the valley, just way off in the east. And it wasn't too far. I think it was like an hour and 20 minutes or something from, how do you pronounce that? Jiang?
Chengdu.
No, X-I-A-N-G.
Oh, what? Xi'an, like Xi'an. X-I-A-N is Xi'an.
Oh, okay. And
I hope I'm pronouncing it right because my students will probably message me on QQ.
Well,
I'm always being corrected.
I
speak American Chinese.
I wanted to go see the pyramid, and I had a day. It was like a free day. I couldn't get anybody to take me there.
They have off the beaten path things that are supposed to be really interesting that no Westerner has really been, you know, allowed to see. So it takes what they call guanzi in order to do that.
It takes what?
Guanxi, G-U-A-N-X-I, guanxi, friendship. You have to get to know the locals. You have to get to know someone who knows someone.
Ah.
You can go into the libraries and see where the things that we are interested in and what the radio program is about is there. But it's in Chinese and it hasn't been translated.
Right. So
it's
you could read Chinese too?
It's there. It's just not in our language, our English language.
You can read Chinese too?
No, I can read. I can read Pinyin. I can read a little Chinese. It's very. There's a pattern to it. I understand older Chinese a little better, because the language has evolved. And it was a little bit more simpler back, you know, ancient times than it is now. And I'm having trouble. My eyes are getting, you know, a little older now. It's kind of difficult to see. But with, you know, how to do the configurations of the writings. But there's a pattern to it. It's like anything else. If you understand the pattern of the language, you'll be able to read it. And it shouldn't be all that difficult. Ancient Chinese is a little bit easier to understand because the character itself doesn't have as many lines or hooks to it, and that's a little different. But it means the same thing. And they're all it has a pattern that allows to if you can pick it up, allows for a good understanding.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about this pyramid. I've seen pictures of it from a distance. I've heard it was really secret. Who built the pyramid?
Who built the pyramid? Oh, I forgot his name. I really don't know. I don't know exactly. Around a dynasty, I think it's the Huang dynasty at the time was built, obviously, for an emperor. And that was actually the base for the first empress of China. They had an empress at one time. And I think, did you ever see the movie Mulan?
No, I remember Moulin Rouge.
Many, many years ago. Okay? It was called Mulan, and it had to do with a soldier girl. And there's a little bit of story. I think the pyramids were involved in that. But the pyramids are very old. They're obviously, they're not quite sure exactly how old these are. I haven't had the opportunity to really go down there and investigate. I haven't had the time.
When are we going?
They're not quite sure who built them. They're not really, they're, and there's conjecture involving what they were and what are involved. But inside where the emperor is buried, there's a river of mercury around.
That's what I heard, and that there were like big whale blubber lanterns that kept the river lit up.
Were too when they were involved in occultism, and they were after this stuff. They were after the to get this, the Beryl, and what they tried to target was getting inside that pyramid and getting as much information as they could out of it, and they weren't successful in doing it. They were awesome to them.
I imagine anybody that breaks into a pyramid that has been filled with the river of mercury for 1,000 years better have some special breathing apparatus and a Class C hazmat outfit, or they're not going to survive it.
Exactly. It's just like, but there's something occult to it, and it's something that they wanted to see what they can get from it, in order to proliferate their ideals, whatever, you know, what those ideals were.
Yeah. Well,
right now they're basically, if you look at the pyramids, they're basically mounds. I mean, at one time, you know, they're very tall, you know, they're very tall in structure, very wide. But, you know, the original configuration is not what it was. It's just like the pyramids in Egypt, of which you've seen.
Or the ones in South America. If you go see those in Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, pyramids in Egypt had I think they had a lapis lazuli or stone on it. It was actually really beautiful. All we're seeing is blocks.
The limestone had been stripped off a long time ago and used to build all kinds of buildings. That's what amazes me about the difference between the Chinese culture and the Egyptian culture. The Egyptians, when they stumbled upon the pyramids that were there, instead of revering them and trying to keep them intact, they stripped them like a bunch of scavengers. At least the Chinese haven't gone in and robbed this pyramid and tried to make a buck off of it. They're trying to keep it secret and reverent.
Yeah, they do. The Chinese are very protective of everything. And that's why it's very difficult to get into some areas. That's why we have to make friends. I have to make friends with, if I have a student that lives there or if I know someone, that's how we get into where they're not supposed to be. Or, you know, no Western is ever. There are some temples that I wasn't allowed to enter into. There are temples that I went to, areas in China that no Westerner has ever been at all.
Like what?
It was in around Lijiang and Shandong. It was one area. And I know no Westerners have ever been there. And they would just look at you like, wow, what are you? Like you're from another world. They've never seen a foreigner. They know.
Sure.
I swear to you, Brooks. I mean, I've literally had people that were riding their bikes run into the next car in front of them or a tree looking at me.
Wow.
That they've never seen anything like me. They don't know. They've never seen a foreigner. I've had people that would drop their agricultural tools and just open their mouth and just walk, just watch me walk by.
Yeah. Wow.
Amazing. It's amazing.
Like you're brave enough to come this deep into China, or that they actually have never seen?
Yeah, I guess so. I was never in fear. You know, when I'm in China, I just don't have a fear. It's relaxing. I just don't think about it. I used to notice people looking at me, but they're not going to do anything to me, and they're friendly.
Well, tell us about the places in China that you have been that would just amaze Westerners.
Amaze Westerners. Wow. That's about the entire country. If you want to go to Taishan, Mount Taishan is very famous. If you can climb to the top to that mountain and see the sunrise, that's awesome. That's awesome. There's so many forests, there's mountain ranges that just have such a spirituality to it, such a peaceful feeling to it. In and around, let's see, Weihai is one, northern Shandong is one, Qingdao is another, Laoshan, which is just, I believe, north of Qingdao, where they had the Olympics. There's so many places in the north. Harbin is one. Harbin, right during the wintertime, is so cold that they actually build and cut ice villages.
Wow.
Amazing. It's not just these small, you know, carvings. We're talking about buildings here and hotels and all that kind of stuff in Harbin. I would recommend, if anybody wants to see something fantastic, go to Harbin during the wintertime. It's just, yeah, to see the ice sculptures. But there's so much to the cultures there. I mean, go to Beijing, go to the, you know, Forbidden City. That's another thing. But also in the south, too, in Guangxi province, Guilin is one, during the summertime. The entire country is just amazing and just scenic value. There's so many places. I know I travel to, even Inner Mongolia, that's another place. I mean, that's the prairies, the grassland, the horses. Just an amazing, warm people. I have students that are Mongolian.
Did you have any epiphanies in any of these particular areas? You say that there's a high spirituality in the land. And I know this is something Westerners don't understand.
In a sense, yes. I would say yes. And there's yet to come. You know, there are some areas that I know that I would like to be now. That you're definite, you know, it would be definitely some sort of resonation. But yeah, you do have it, and I have dreams about it, and that's probably why I stayed as long as I did, almost 4 years. You know, you do have that type of feeling. Not everybody resonates, you know, there. Many do. Many go there and never come back, believe it or not. There are many Westerners that go there, and they never return to their, you know, their native land because it resonates with them. And it's interesting, it's not so much an epiphany, it's a way of life. Once it becomes a way, we're discovering things at the Western end here of things, and we're thinking, wow, this is really cool. To them, it's a way of life, whether it be Qigong or the martial arts or Tai Chi, and I've watched many of these, you know, demonstrations of this, of the people in the park doing their Tai Chi, and it's a way of life for them. They wake up and they do this, and it's with them all the time. If you want to call it epiphany, it's with them all the time. It's their way of life. And if we can get that inculcated in us, our reference point, then we would understand there's so much I need to learn from my students and my friends there that they've been trying to teach me. Can't you see this? Can't you see this? I said, no. But, you know, they do because they live it. They live it. They don't have to worship it. They don't, you know, they live it.
Well, I know sometimes people fall into patterns and rituals that keep them out of trouble and avoid conflict and these kinds of things. I have several chatters who are asking me to get back on the subject of the pyramid. One of them's gone to Google. He says it's confidential at a very high price. And they want to know more about the pyramid. They're very curious about it.
You can do some research on it. You can do it on the pyramids themselves. You'd have to go there. I mean,
when are we going?
If you resonate with it, it's excuse me.
When are we going?
Well, whenever you want to go. In fact, we can go tomorrow. Let's go.
So you have friends that can get us there, because you know I'm kind of known for getting pictures of things I'm not supposed to get, and I want to bring them back. I just feel drawn to these kinds of mysteries of the earth. I want some pictures of that pyramid. I want to know what's going on.
Oh, there's many things that are going there. Many things that are going on. That's just one area of the country. You know, the entire country resonates at some point, but the pyramids are just one of them. You'd have to go there, and we can go anytime. We just get our visas, and I've got friends, and I've got guides, and my students are asking me every day, when you're coming back, when you're coming back. It's just, you know, where do you want me to go, you know? I said, I want to go to Tien and see the pyramids. They'll go, okay, let's go, because they know people. You'll be able to get on the inside of the inside.
Well, yeah. That's where I want to get. Now, I've got to go back to China here very shortly for some electric car business, because our supplier is in Jiangsu City, and I'm going to spend some time in China, and I want to make a couple of days, I want to carve a couple of days out to put my my book bag on with my cameras in it, and I'm going to hike up there. I'm going to find out. And it would sure be a lot easier if I didn't have to ride a bicycle the whole way, if I could get some inside help. So I'm serious about this. Let's go find out.
Well, we could. We'll do it. Yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, when you want to do it, and we can go.
All right. So, well, I'm definitely going to stay in touch.
I'll tell you, I have so many friends there. It's almost wherever you want to go, we'll go, you know, and they are so welcoming. They are so welcoming there, and they miss me, and they want me to come back. So there's so many stories about the pyramids. You have to remember, a lot of this is in Chinese, okay? They have to go through an interpreter. My student would have to, you know, talk. But there are legends. There are legends that no Westerner knows about. And the only way of doing it is you got to go there. You have to go there. You have to feel it, resonate with it.
Well, help us out a little bit, because, I mean, we're not getting on the plane tomorrow. What exactly would we see if we went there? I mean, help draw a little picture for us.
What would you see?
Yeah.
That pyramid?
Right.
You're going to see mounds. You're going to see basically grass mounds. You know, it's not going to be anything. Don't even think about Egypt. You know, because it's not like that.
They're not tall like that. They're low and wide.
They put grass. They don't want you to see it, for one thing. They don't want you to see it from the air, so it's like a grassland with big humps.
Well, but I don't know. You know, in Mexico, the wind blows around a lot, and the dust gets up on the pyramids, and then it rains, and the seeds that are dropped by birds grow. And if you go to Teotihuacan, you can see dozens and dozens of pyramids off to the left if you're sitting on top of the Temple of the Moon. And they're covered in grass. They literally have to beat the wilderness back with a stick, because these things get covered so quickly. So it might not be a clandestine way of keeping it hidden. They just might not have a budget to clean it off.
Mm-hmm. But the Chinese are very, they're not ones to advertise things like that, which is kind of weird, because they want to impress you. I mean, look at the Olympics, look at all the buildings. I mean, there are these big buildings, the Great Wall, everything. They want to impress you with certain things, you know. But when it comes to something like that, they're pretty low-key, because they know that there's more to it than meets the eye.
Well, maybe, but you don't see any archaeology. You don't see... There's no archaeology going on in China like there is in Egypt. I mean, Egypt, they don't have any oil. They don't have any natural resources except sand. And the only thing that they've got are their antiquities. And believe me, they're using heavy equipment, and they're digging out cities as fast as they can get to them so that they can bring more tourists into their country.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there's no archaeology like that going on in China.
No, they can't. I mean, it's really... they're very protective of everything, you know, and they don't want to, you got to be respectful of it because there are religious issues involving some of this stuff.
Ah.
So they have a paranormal issue with it, too, that they're not letting everybody know about. And there are records, and there are some things about the area there that we don't, you know, that Westerners don't know about because it hasn't been translated from their written works. There's a tremendous amount, there's a library of their writers, their poets, their historians, whether it be Confucius or Lao Tzu, all of these, they write about this stuff. And a lot of it hasn't been translated. And that's why we're missing the history of, you know, the Qian pyramids and what their meaning is.
It sounds to me, with your skill level and your connections, that's a history that should be written and told to the world.
You know, absolutely. I've got students that are, you know, I told them I've been working on this for at least three years with this, and they want to know too, believe it or not, because they're not informed. That's another thing the Chinese government doesn't do is inform their citizens of what's really happening. And when you enter into an area like the Xi'an area or those pyramids, that's a different resonation. It's something that there's something there, you know. And there's other parts of that country that the same thing is happening, but they're not going to advertise that. You got to come there and see it. And the invitation's there. I mean, they've been open for 20 years.
Well, I think we should take them up on the invitation. I definitely think there's something there. One of my chatters is asking me to ask you about openings in China that you have found.
Openings. I won't even tell you the secrets on here. Yeah, I have found some. There's a few of them. There are openings there. But at this point, I can't, from me personally, I can't say exactly where they're at and who's involved because I would compromise them. But there are openings. There's definitely an opening. Like I said, China doesn't advertise things. You have to go there, and you have to experience it. You got to, you know, and that's what's wonderful about teaching. That's why we need, you know, Western teachers over there. You can teach, you can explore, you can do a lot of things, and there are openings there. They're just not telling you that because they don't, you know, again, they're a very shy people. They're very respectful, and they don't want to lose face. There are certain Guangxi friendships you have to develop and in order to see these places. But they're there, believe it or not. They are there. And well, I've come upon a few of them and then he hit me right in the third eye with some of this.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah, but it's there. It's there. It's just a matter of no one really, you know, they think of China being mysterious. Well, it is and it isn't. The invitation is there for us to go. And we can go.
Are there openings to the inner earth in China?
Yes, there are.
How do you locate them? I mean, is there are they a local mystery? Are they in a mountain, in a valley, in the bottom of a lake, a river?
You just answered it.
Okay.
Just answered it. It's like asking how do I improve my spoken English. Yeah, they're there. There are the legends, the locals, their stories. I mean, I've sat down and just go to these villages. They're just way out of these places with my friends, and we'd sit and just talk, and I'd listen, and they're describing things that we're talking about. You know, it's just, you know, there's more to this. It's just unbelievable, some of this stuff. The locals are so friendly. They're so welcoming. And they have stories to tell, just like, you know, like we do. And it's real. When you go and check this out or follow the guide, and yeah, it's there. That stuff is real and it's there. It's just a matter of getting to it.
Well, what are the stories that you've heard from the locals? I mean, have they gone into the inner earth? Have they had inner earth beings come out and meet with them? Have they received messages?
At that point, no, I don't know at this point. I haven't encountered anyone that's actually met anyone that's come out. There are three areas of that country that I'm going to investigate and see if it's a possibility that this may happen. There are three definitely, there's definitely something there. Some of these stories have to do with legends, similar to what we're talking about, because if there is an inner earth presence, it's going to be worldwide, okay? We understand that. And that influence is in their artwork. It's in their artwork, their writings. I've seen things that are like, this isn't Chinese. What is this? You know? And it's in there. It's a lot of it's around their temple areas. And it's in their villages, and it's just on, it's carvings, it's like petroglyphs, it's things like that. And there are also caves. You know, if you're in South China, there's caves, and there's caves all over China. And these are entrances. It's a matter of I haven't found anything, and that's what why I want to get back there, because I kind of gave that assignment to my students to help me locate some of these places. But the Xian Pyramids are just part of it. They're just part of the story, the legends of how we came to be and the creation process. And there's so much written in that language, and there's so much that's described on their artwork that it tells a story. And you have to go there, and it'll point you to where these things are, just like Tibet, you know, where you were. But there are openings, there are paranormal things that do occur, and it's an exciting place to be. It really is.
Well, I'm excited about it. I know when I went to Tibet, the first thing that I noticed when I got off the plane in Lhasa, and we shuffled our way to the hotel. We were at 11,500 feet. Our guide said, look, don't walk, don't pick up your luggage, just shuffle to the hotel and go to bed so that you can acclimate to the altitude. Well, I didn't think 11,000 feet was that high anyway, but I did what I was told. But when I walked in the hotel, right there in front of me was the symbol of Tibetan Buddhism. And my goodness, it looked just like a hollow earth. I mean, there it was right in front of you. And it was everywhere, all through Tibetan Buddhism. When I went to China, however, I did not see that much iconic stuff. I saw a lot of architecture. I saw statues. I saw, you know, gargoyles and warriors and things like that. But I didn't see the icons like you see in Tibet. It was so strange, like it was antiseptic almost.
Yeah, you have it. Yeah, I've seen it. I was in some places in Shandong where I first was at. There's temples and there's that. Well, actually, in a city called Nanshan, Nanshan, Nanshan. There's a big Buddha. There's a huge Buddha, and it takes a long time to. In fact, I'm gonna send you the photo when I find it. You gotta climb these steps all the way up to the top, and it's a big Buddha. There are a lot of that. If you can locate the temples, that's kind of the key, is locating this and talking to them, because it exists. It's there. It's just finding it, and it's knowing who to talk to. It's finding these friends, and they'll take you there. A lot of it's you'll see your stone carvings, you'll see your idols, you'll see all of this stuff, and it tells a story about, no doubt it has to do with the inner earth. Because I've asked them, because one of my questions had to do with why I was there. I wanted to do something involving what I was seeing in my mind. And that's what drew me to China, of all places. And that's how I became involved in going to China and teaching and learning and trying to find these places and following the star pattern and all of this. To see where these things existed. and what mountain ranges to look for. And it's there. It's kind of a cool thing.
Well, maybe it was just the environment that I was in. It was very business-like, and I felt kind of funny asking them questions about archaeology and ancient history and inner earth things. I concentrated mostly on buying cars and getting ready to launch our company. We do have Robin on line one. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Brooke. Hi. I've got a couple questions to ask you, Kevin.
What's your question?
I've got more than one, but can you give me a more detailed feel of, like, when you were searching for these areas, these openings? They're not normal openings like caves, like you just walk into where you would see, you know, on the side of a mountain, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, a description of it? Well, to some extent, did you ever see the movie The Shadow with Alec Baldwin?
Oh, no. Sure, yeah.
Watch it.
The shadow knows.
It's about how your mind is clouded. How can I describe it? Well, as far as the opening,
Describe it like you're. Yeah, describe the opening. Describe it like you're. I'm a blind person, and I'm with you. And
you are.
Describe to me what I'm seeing and feeling. Yeah, because I'm a listener right now, so I can't see what you see. I haven't been when you've been.
Well, maybe telepathically.
I need you to. I need you to describe.
You're probably looking at
something
very holographic, something that would be ultra-dimensional, something that you would have to tune to, and you can see it.
Yeah.
You'd have to resonate with that, and you just can't walk in there and go, oh, I'm inside a cave or something. But it's more or less, it's almost like how can I describe it? All of a sudden you're there, okay? What would be a term?
Like
a shadow runner, I guess. Because it's not something that's going to come out at you and it's there. You're going to have to feel it and then you'll see it. Because it'll
have to be in a state of being that
your entire emotional content. What's that?
Okay, so I'd have to be in a state of being where I'm kind of just feeling, right? Like a more of a meditative
state. You could, but the reason why you would be there is because of that anyway. You know, you would be drawn to that area, and you would see it.
Okay.
It's like anything. If you went to Karnak, Egypt, or wherever, or, Valley of the Kings, and you, oh, wow, boom, I wasn't expecting it, but somehow you unconsciously resonated that because that's part of your being. Your aura, which Brooks and I talked about, will detect that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well,
you'll detect that.
Yeah, when my soulmate and I were in Egypt, we were at Karnak, and just looking at the hieroglyphs, triggered, just like you said, like a DNA reaction, and memories or remembrances started flooding in, and very quickly, very fast. So that was more, in that sense, at that time, it was different than the other times that we've experienced our spiritual life together, but in that sense, when I'm going to China and I'm going to be there, and if I'm triggered, this is not going to be, I'm not going to be looking at hieroglyphs, I'm going to be in a location where I feel a strong sense, like a magnetic grid-type pull. That'll start to activate.
It's possible you may enter into what is known as an earth gate or a possible vortex. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
you have to remember that the earth is polyhedral. It's like a dodecahedron. It's not just these grid lines function on different, different ultra-dimensional features. And they may not apply to where you're at, but it's there. Okay, there is a power grid there.
And you feel
vortex
the pull,
possibly,
the body
Yeah, you'll enter into it. Yeah, you will.
And like, what sensations would I start experiencing once entering it? What do you
entering
think?
Entering
it, some
it,
of the
it it's a different. It would be a different experience for everyone. It's based upon your individual senses, what you'll see.
What was your experience like when you entered?
What was my experience like?
Yeah. Describe yours.
You want to describe what I describe what I saw?
Yeah.
Actually, it was a library, believe it or not.
Really?
It was about 3 years ago, actually. Excuse me, about 3 years ago. It was definitely, because I had an artifact with me, for one thing. That was a key, too. I had an artifact that originated from that. So that is also a key, too. If you have an artifact that is drawn to a certain area, you're going to resonate with that, and that's also something that will draw you to where you need to be. And the problem I had was trying to play this or try to access what's in it as far as the matrix of it in order to enter further into where, you know, I wanted to go, which I didn't go any further. So that's the key.
What stopped you from going any further?
Well, what stopped me? I think I got overpowered. I think I kind of overpowered mentally, and I think I may have been apprehensive. You know, not afraid, but a bit apprehensive. And I think I withdrew.
Because it was new?
And because I wasn't sure, and I needed to kind of, you know, reconcile what was happening, what I did see, write it down, and, you know, like a language, you know, and try to understand it more before I continue. I was a bit apprehensive because it never happened to me on this point, at this degree, you know, at that magnitude. So I had a withdrawal, had a comeback, and write down what I saw. And
what did you write down?
Try to go back again.
Guys, we only have about 2 minutes in this hour, so I just want to let you know it's a great line of questioning, but I have another caller waiting on line two, and I'd like to squeeze him in before the end of the hour.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thomas, line two, you're on the program. Welcome. Oh, Thomas is gone. Come on. Oh, my goodness. Is Thomas there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, Thomas. Real quick, we got about 2.5 minutes in this hour. Do you have a question?
Well, I was just kind of wondering what stopped you guys, or what is stopping you guys from trying to fly into inner Earth? I mean, the Yamal is not seeming to be financed very well. I was wondering if you guys have thought about flying in there.
Yes, of course we have. We could raise, it's about $65,000 to take a flight. We checked into a 727. It's the only plane that has the distance that can make it up there and back a round trip. However, the pilot will not fly any lower than 17,000 feet, so we would not see anything but clouds at that height, I'm afraid.
Gotcha. You guys are talking about China. Have you looked on Google Earth at some of the amazing things that they have on there?
In China?
On YouTube, it was listed as weird places.
Well, yes, I have. Can you name one? What one you're referring to?
I'm not sure what the name of it is, but it's the one with all the lines. I mean, it's like huge. I mean, it's like ginormous. And,
you know,
it's like,
you know, what area of China, possibly?
What do the lines look like?
It looks
what
like...
Region? What region? Was
like
it south or north or west? Or?
It's right in the center, actually. And trying to see if there was a name by it, but I can give you the coordinates if you guys want that. It's like north 40 degrees, 27 feet, 39 inches. By east 93 degrees, 23 feet, 33 inches. And there's a couple of these things, and they're just, you can tell that they're very old. And they have like mounds of dirt covering them, but you can see it. And then between the two strange things, there's like a gigantic airfield that you can tell is also very old. It looks like it had to be at least World War II or older. And I just wondered if you guys had seen any of that stuff. And it's kind of like right in the middle of China.
In the middle of China, Wuhan, possibly.
I don't see any.
Was it along a river? Was it along a river or anything?
Not really. Okay. Looks like there might have been an old river there at one time because there's a lot of matter there. Mm-hmm. But if you look up those coordinates and see that sometime, I mean, the thing is just so big for people to walk around. I mean, the roads are really dinky compared to mm-hmm. how big the lines are. And the thing is like a big square with all these geographic shapes in it. And it's pretty mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But did you
I'd like
say
to see that.
Actually,
I'd like to see a photo of the area.
Yeah,
if I knew what province it was in, I can track it.
Yeah. Well, if you guys got those coordinates I wrote, you'll be able to find it pretty easy.
I got it. North 40, East 93. We'll look it up. Got to take a break. We'll be back in about 3 minutes with more X Squared Radio and Kevin David. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio.